Well, this is a big one.
Special edition.
It's special edition. Normally, we're goofing around.
Yeah,
I've never been more ashamed to let somebody into our studio. As soon as he came in, I was like a lady. I was like, well, sorry, it's so messy in here. We're here with Nick Bryant. He's the author of The Franklin Scandal and...
Confessions of a Madam.
Yes, Confessions of a DC Madam.
Confessions of a DC Madam. The Politics of Sex, Lies, and Blackmail.
Yes.
Goddamn.
Pull
that mic up,
Nick. You speak a little more into the mic. So what you were just saying is how you got involved in the Franklin Scandal at the very beginning. So let's jump right in.
I was talking to an editor at Rolling Stone, and he said, pitch me dark stories. And I said, just kind of throwing my hands up in there. So, what do you want? Do you want a story on Nazis? Do you want a story on Satanists? I mean, what do you want? And he goes, Satanists. That sounds good. So I started this whole odyssey, this very dark odyssey. I was talking to Satanists, and they struck me as, they didn't strike me as very ethical people.
Yeah.
Actually quite unctuous. And I felt like I had to wash my hands, after I hung out with them.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, and then I was trolling the internet looking for subject matter. I mean, when you're going to write something, you try to get as much information as you can and then distill it. And then I came across a cult called the Finders that had been busted by the U.S. Customs for trafficking children. They had 6 kids in Tallahassee, Arizona, and some concerned citizens called Tallahassee Police Department, and Tallahassee Police Department arrested the 2 Finders and put the 6 kids in protective custody. Yeah. And the 2 Finders were arraigned on multiple counts of child abuse, multiple counts. Mm-hmm. And they were held at a $100,000 bond. I think might even been higher. And then, two of the kids, according to the Tallahassee police report that I got, 2 of the kids have been sexually abused. And then the U.S. Customs report, U.S. Customs got involved with it because there was child pornography. And they got a search warrant for the warehouse where the Finders lived, and they found child pornography.
The warehouse is in like D.C., right?
Yes, in Washington, D.C. And they found all kinds of really unsavory things. And actually, the Finders had been connected to a murder, too. And all of a sudden, the CIA came in and quashed the entire case. And those 2 Finders were just let out of jail. And those kids were repatriated with the cult. And I thought to myself, I kind of thought I knew how the world worked. But after I read that document, it just blew my mind. I mean, what have I missed? Yeah. As far as my understanding of the world, how is this even possible that the CIA goes to bat for some very strange people that are treating children nefariously? I mean, how does that happen? So that started my odyssey. That was in 2002, and I've been on this odyssey for the last 20 years.
Wow. Damn. So what did the editor say when you're like, I got something, when you came back with that,
rather
than like run of the mill?
He said, Satanism. Nick, let's just try to stick with Satanism.
What do you think? How many Satanists have you talked to, and like, what's their like life philosophy? Isn't it just pretty much like selfishness, or like?
Well, I mean, there's different types of Satanists.
Because if that's the case, I might be a Satanist. I'm pretty selfish with my lifestyle. Way, dude.
You're not talking enough.
There's different types of Satanists, and they run the gamut. Some of them, it was very strange. Some of the Satanists that I talked to were really, really stupid. Mm-hmm. And some of them were really, really smart.
Yeah.
I didn't find any Satanists in between. But I was going to go to one of the black masses. It was a simple plan. I'm going to go to this black mass and I'm going to write an article about it. And one of the high priest said I had to read this book written by one of the Satanists, the founder of that particular satanic sect. And I read the book and I said, I read the book. And he said, well, you got to do this. And then I just, he was trying to lead me down this primrose path to embracing Beelzebub, and I realized that they were actually proselytizing to me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really like a religion that I felt attracted to.
Sure.
Didn't you have to like eat like
eat like a cum cookie?
You were trying to get you to eat like
yes. Well, that was one of the problems.
Would your editor like come on?
The host was the potentiated ministration and semen of the high priestess and then the priest.
On what? And what was the...
Like a flowery wafer. With the Satanists, everything is anti, like it's an anti-host. Sure, you know? Yeah. So, and it's an anti-black mass, whatever. But, well, that was the deal. If I read the book, I wouldn't have to take the anti-host.
Right.
And...
really? That was so, like if you don't read the...
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
You read the book and you won't have... But then I read the book and I said, no, you still have to take the anti-host.
Oh.
So,
what the fuck?
So I'm really up to... I like people to live up to their word. That's important to me. And it was kind of apparent to me that the people in the darker fraternity didn't share his truth the way that I did.
But and you were at an ashram, right, when you were younger?
I lived in an ashram when I was 19 years old.
How'd you fall into that? It's like it's not necessarily Hindu, but it's
this
like,
was a Hindu. This was okay. a Swami. He was from India. He was a genuine Indian guru.
The Raiders.
When I was in my teens, I was really searching.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried all kinds of spiritual paths. And then I ended up living on this ashram with a genuine Indian guru. He was a Swami, which means he was celibate. And so I got there and I was thirsty for knowledge. And then I was talking to the Swami one day and I could have swore I smelled cigarettes on his breath. And, you know, I went to one of the people on the ashram who I would later call the pod people. I said, I could have sworn I smelled cigarettes on Swami's breath. And he goes, yeah, well, see, the deal with that is he has to have one vice that keeps him tethered to this plane of reality so he can teach us. And now, needless to say, that didn't make a lot of sense to me. And then I found out that he was having sex with all these girls on the ashram. And then I found out he was embezzling money from his affluent initiates. And I was thinking to myself, that guy must be really spiritually developed. if he's got to do all that just to stay on this plane of reality. I think that's why I sold weed for so long.
Yeah. That was a bit of a Swami.
No. Yeah, I always find that intriguing when people end up on because they seem like a cool place to live. It's just a place you would go. Rather than like a Christian youth thing, it would just be like...
I'm fairly certain every single one of those is that.
What do you think?
I don't know if I've heard of one story
about... You'd be smirching all the masters.
I've never heard of one guru that wasn't definitely banging a bunch of the people.
Yes, that's what I concluded. Because I looked into a lot of different gurus after that, and they all have lower chakra problems.
Really?
Every guru has lower chakra. You know, they're old, ugly Indian men, and then they're
trying to get Bob's and Vagin, and they found the best way to get Bob.
That's true.
And then they come here, and they have all these... beautiful young American women who are spiritually starved, throwing themselves at these, and then it's too much temptation.
Yeah, how could they resist?
Yeah, it's like I found a book in a used bookstore one time. They write really good books though. Like I read this was by a priest, and it was like one of the best little books on spirituality I ever read. And I'm like, I gotta Google this guy, pedophile. I was like, motherfucker,
damn it.
Yeah.
Well, I read Rama's books, and mm-hmm. I was really fascinated by them, and. So, I mean, that's why I ended up at that ashram.
So, what do you want to get into first here? Because I read the beginning of I read about half of the Franklin Scandal. And like I said, I was falling asleep. I listen to audiobooks at night. So I was listening to the Franklin Scandal at night and it was fucking me up. Like every night I was like, Jesus Christ. And then I would start, I never went to sleep. I would just start Googling things like the finders. Immediately I started Googling that. And then I started going into like Pizzagate because it was in D.C., and they were attracting the same. Like, then I was like, is Pizzagate real? Like, you know, it just every time I started reading, is Pizzagate real?
I have no idea on that one. I'm agnostic towards good. Pizza. With my philosophic training, I studied philosophy in college. I try to approach everything agnostically. I really try not to make judgments on something, even though it may seem like a tautological truth, I try to withhold judgment. And with Pizzagate, I'm agnostic.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But with the Finders, it was the same. I mean, I was listening to you talk about it, but it was the same thing where it's like, once you explain, like, six children were found with two dudes in suits. Yes. Were they wearing, like, suits?
Yeah.
And the children are all malnourished enough so that just a regular person called the cops when they saw them.
Concerned citizens.
And then they got nothing. It was like, yo, this is very weird.
And then, there's no way. They were like, no, we're just making sure they're good. We just like to dress nice and we didn't have the budget for their clothes yet.
And the guys wouldn't talk, right, when they were getting interrogated.
They had the card ready. The card to be like.
And one guy actually went unconscious when the police started to grill him.
He went into satanic trance?
He played possum.
I don't know if it was satanic, but he just went unconscious. Yeah.
It's a good way to resist.
It's in the U.S.
I might do that to my wife.
Just dead weight. She starts talking to you. Get a card.
You might have to hook your wife up with the Finders, which I know might be a, I don't know if I'd advise that, but you never know.
That is crazy because you do that. There's a lot of people, I'm sure you know this, who are delighted in being like, that's all a bunch of bull. They don't want to hear any of it whatsoever. But that's like, how much of it is like, as you say, like some of it's conjecture, some of it is like how much of the stuff you've done is like ends in kind of like some nebulous weird stuff or like what's like factual anyone could take and be like, this actually happened.
I mean, the Franklin scandal, I was very, very cautious with it and very, very careful. I wanted to nail everything because I knew what I was, the book that I was writing was so antithetical to people's mundane reality that it was going to be met with very, very, a lot of skepticism. Mm-hmm. So, but what happened with me with the Franklin scandal is I was able to score. Like, there were three grand juries that covered it up. There were two grand juries in Nebraska and one grand jury in Washington, D.C. Now, I don't know if your viewers are familiar with the grand jury, but grand juries are infamous for covering things up. Actually, like, there was a grand jury in Florida looking into Epstein that said that Epstein hadn't molested a single child. What happens in a grand jury is a special prosecutor is chosen, and then grand jurors are just regular people that have come in to do jury duty and they've been funneled to a grand jury. And it's not adversarial. The special prosecutor picks the evidence that is shown to the grand jurors and calls the witnesses. So special prosecutors have a tremendous amount of power over grand jurors. And actually there was a New York judge that had a famous quip that grand jurors have so much power or special prosecutors have so much power over grand jurors that they could get them to indict a ham sandwich. Yeah. So with the Franklin
scandal. I've indicted a few of those.
With the Franklin scandal, those two grand juries in Nebraska said that not a single child had been abused.
Yeah.
And
I read the article you sent as far as like, I know this is gross detail, but one of the reasons they were able to discount the children who said they were molested by Epstein was one of them said he used a purple vibrator and another one said he used a white vibrator. So they were like, well, these two are lying.
What?
Yeah. I mean,
like he's just a one vibrator.
Something well, like that.
They only called one of the victims.
Okay.
One of the underage victims. And it was obvious that was a cover up job.
Yeah.
And it's really a shame that most Americans, because when you think of grand jury, you think the gods of jurisprudence have spoken, but that's not the case at all. It's just a special prosecutor that's been chosen to show grand jurors what he thinks is compelling evidence.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of cover up state place is in grand juries. And then everything is sealed in a grand jury. And what happened with me is I was able to get everything. I was able to get the sealed testimony and I was able to get the sealed exhibits from one of the corrupt grand juries in Nebraska, which at that point I was able to write the book. And like I had a list of 60 victims. So it was up to me to find the victims. And that was tough because a lot of those kids, and you see with Epstein too, you see with a lot of pedophile networks, a lot of the kids come from lower socioeconomic backgrounds and dysfunctional families, and that makes them ripe for predators. In this case, with the Franklin scandal, Lawrence King and also Craig Spence and with Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein, and all the predators that were around him. So finding them was very, very difficult because a lot of them had just dropped off the planet, because these kids were from really dysfunctional backgrounds, poor backgrounds, and they were given money and repeatedly molested. And then once they lost their youthful marketability, they were expunged by the network. And they went on to become criminals to support. They were all drug addicts.
Yeah.
Or most of them were drug addicts. So they became criminals and then they ended up in prison. So it was very difficult to find a lot. A lot of them never really used their social security number. So,
yeah.
And I found them in projects. I found one in a homeless shelter. I found one in a prison. I mean, they were difficult.
Yeah,
they
messed up.
Yeah. What are they? How, like, are they like excited to talk to you, or are they just kind of like, who are you? Or like, how did you get to like have them actually talk to you about this stuff?
Well, it's, you've got to be patient and you've got to be compassionate. I mean, I was very compassionate to all the victims that I met because of what they've been through. And it's a matter of trust. I mean, you've got to build up trust with them. Sometimes the trust comes immediately, and sometimes the trust, it takes a while to build up the trust. But once you build trust with them, they will, you know, tell you about the worst horrors of their life.
So what happened with the Franklin scandal?
So with the Franklin scandal, it was a large interstate pedophile network that was that flew kids from coast to coast, but a lot of, and I also got flight receipts, like 200 flight receipts. A lot of the planes that they rented or chartered went to Washington, D.C. And in Washington, D.C., there was a lobbyist power broker named Craig Spence. And he was a CIA asset, and his house was wired for audiovisual blackmail. I get into his reality pretty heavily in Confessions of a D.C. Madam, and I also get into it in the Franklin scandal, but a little more in Confessions of a D.C. Madam.
Well, so, Guardini, does his mic have to move up a little bit towards him?
Tiny bit.
You can slide this thing down. Let me see.
The Wild Wild West.
Right. So these pedophile parties would happen at Craig Spence's mansion in the Kalorama section of Washington, D.C. And it would be like a pretty much a straight political party initially. There would be Washington, D.C. literati and glitterati and power brokers and politicians.
Clarence Thomas.
They would attend these parties. But then, like, maybe at 10 o'clock or something, someone would fire up a joint or something sexually inappropriate would happen. And these people have been plied with alcohol. So if someone wanted to stick around for the after party, then they would be compromised.
So you see, like, the level of grease a person could handle. Like,
yes.
The girls would come out.
They would get me.
Bust out of line. Yeah.
I'd be hammered doing... Yeah, they'd get me.
You don't want to say that.
I'm truthful. I only deal in truth.
So
they'd get me, dude.
So didn't it go all the way back to, like, to the start of the Franklin scandal stuff? It went back to Vietnam, supposedly?
Well, King, like, and the two primary pimps, Lawrence King and Craig Spence. King, during Vietnam, King was in Thailand with a security clearance, a top security clearance. And Craig Spence was in Vietnam as a reporter for ABC. Mm-hmm. So they were both in Thailand at the same time. I'm surmising that, and this is just my surmise, I'm surmising that both of them were molesting kids in Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately the dark corner of intelligence that does this type of stuff got a hold of them and said, you know, you can either do time or you can work for us.
Yeah.
Because when both came back to the United States of America, I mean, they were both from working class families, and all of a sudden their careers just went exponentially high. So I'm thinking that was probably the deal that they made while they were in Southeast Asia.
Yeah. Gotcha. And it's the Franklin scandal because Larry King was in, he
Lawrence
was
E. King
Omaha.
Owned a, he was the general manager of the Franklin Credit Union.
Yeah.
And it was like his personal ATM. It's kind of interesting. The feds, you're supposed to be audited every year if you run a credit union. But he hadn't been audited in 4 years. So shortly after George Herbert Walker Bush won the presidency, the Franklin Credit Union was raided by IRS and FBI. And there was $40 million missing. So, yes. So, but basically that credit union was a cash machine for Lawrence King, but it was also a front for this interstate pedophile network that they ran together.
And he was definitely pimping.
Absolutely. Both he and Craig Spence were pimping. And
ABC reporter?
Yes. Craig Spence was the guy who ended up in Washington, D.C.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah. He was the one who was having the parties.
Oh, so that was the guy who was hosting the functions.
Yeah, I mean, the parties were all over, but Spence's, the intelligence, like I said, the dark corner of intelligence that does this type of stuff had installed the cameras, the hidden cameras. And Epstein, now this is kind of interesting. Maria Farmer, who worked for Epstein, said that Epstein showed her the secret room where men, as in plural, were monitoring all these monitors, and that all the bedrooms and all the bathrooms had hidden cameras. So that setup was very much like the setup in Craig Spence's house, where both places were wire fraud division.
Yeah, so Craig Spence was the Epstein of this particular story.
Yes, yes.
Oh, I got you. He was the party boy.
He was the party boy.
Cool guy. He was a cool guy.
He was a cool guy, dude.
He was a cool guy at the operation.
He was, Craig Spence was the Prince of Darkness.
Yeah.
Was he in Satanism too?
I do not know.
Well, I mean, I guess kind of, yeah.
I do not know, but nothing.
He's a good Christian.
That guy was a pure psychopath, so nothing that he would do would surprise me. He was a pedophile, a psychopath, a drug addict.
Jesus.
And he was, I mean, the cream of the crop in Washington, D.C. politics would go to his parties. And
isn't that strange? Yeah, isn't that kind of weird? The same thing with, who was it, when Gates had to go to Epstein for like funding or whatever? It's always strange. Like,
well, you know, the thing about Gates and Epstein is there's an article from the Evening Standard, the cover story. There's so many problems with the Epstein cover story, but there's an article from the Evening Standard from the UK that says that Spence or Epstein and Gates were doing business in the 90s, that their relationship went back to the 90s.
Really?
So, so if that's true, everything that we've been sold about Gates and Epstein is all bullshit, which wouldn't surprise me at all. Because with Epstein, the media has just been into digging up salacious dirt. They haven't been screaming. The Epstein article that I wrote, which no major magazine would touch, called for justice. All these kids were molested. We need justice. Mm-hmm. And but that doesn't seem to be a priority. And the Franklin Network was much bigger than Spence's network. The Franklin Network, I think, was around for about 12 years, and Epstein's network was around for about 25 years. But the Franklin network was bigger, and I thought it was a kinder, gentler pedophile network initially, but then I've come to believe that because the Franklin network, a lot of those kids were pandered to sadistic pedophiles, and there was a lot of pornography made. Child pornography. And I think the same thing was happening with Epstein.
Oh, you're saying that you thought the Epstein one was quote unquote gentler?
Yes. But now that I've gotten to know the Epstein network pretty well, Epstein was pandering girls under the age of 10 to 8-year-olds that I'm aware of. But I'm sure that there were more. And he was also pandering these girls to really sadistic pedophiles. Or some of the clients were very sadistic. Pedophile.
Yeah, because didn't his first case get sealed in the same? Was that sealed in a grand jury as well?
Yeah, that was the one in Florida.
Yeah, that was one. Epstein was like, and he got in trouble.
I could be wrong here, but it was like, it was going to be tried like a regular trial. And then Rich, what's the guy's name? He came in and said, no, let's make it a grand jury. So it was sealed.
Well, that was Barry Kirshner, the state jury. What happened there was a 14-year-old girl went to the Palm Beach Police Department with her parents, and she said that she'd been molested by Jeffrey Epstein. and the Palm Beach, and she described Epstein, she described his house, she described his anatomy, and the Palm Beach Police Department started a year-long investigation into Epstein at that point. And what happened after that year investigation is that they felt like he could, well, they had statements from five victims, and then they had 12 corroborating statements. Yeah. So they were immediately going to arraign him on five counts of child abuse. But then that case got taken away by Barry Kushner in the state of Florida. And then there was a grand jury, which is very strange because usually grand juries in Florida are reserved for capital cases. Mm-hmm. So, and then that grand jury found that Jeffrey Epstein hadn't molested a single child. And only one of, and here's the thing with that. The Palm Beach Police Department had the statements of five underage victims, but they were aware of 17 more. So there were 20, the Palm Beach Police Department was aware of 23 underage victims. And that prosecutor only called one. So it's very, and it's very obvious to me that that was a cover up.
Jeez. And then the matter was sealed. But didn't he have a sex offense on under his belt after that or something?
Well, here's what happened. So when that grand jury came back and said that Jeffrey Epstein hadn't molested a single child, Michael Ryder, who was one of the heroes in this story, he was the chief of the Palm Beach Police Department. He got very vociferous. He raised Cain. He said, you know, and he went to the feds and they said, you know, this is obvious malfeasance by this grand jury and you've got to do something about it. So the feds were going to get into it. They were going to arrest Jeffrey Epstein. Well, they were talking that there was going to be a grand jury, and then all of a sudden the grand jury was adjourned and there was this really unctuous deal made. And I've got the emails between the assistant U.S. attorney and one of Epstein's attorneys, Jay Lefkowitz, and Emery Villafana was the assistant U.S. attorney. And they're talking about how they can minimize Epstein's sentence. And then one of the emails says, well, there, and the deal that they made was so corrupt that they had to go to a special magistrate to sign off on it. And basically what that deal did is it exonerated everyone. It exonerated the procurers. It exonerated the perpetrators. Jeffrey Epstein had to plead guilty to a single count of child abuse. He was sentenced to 18 months in a county jail. He did 13, and he had his little wing of the jail decked out like the Taj Mahal. So, and he was, and he didn't, he could go out during the day. So he was molesting girls during the day while he was, you know, supposedly doing. No.
He was doing like nights there?
Yeah, he only had to spend nights.
What?
There.
What?
Yeah.
Also, and this was 2008. He got arrested. I mean, he did serve time technically in 2008 for what, like 13 of the 18 months.
Something yeah, like he did 13. But here's the deal with that.
He kept hanging out with all these people.
But here's the deal with that.
Yeah. BG okay. was hanging out with him after
Bill
that.
Bill Gates was still chilling.
Yeah.
The feds had a list of 32 Epstein victims. 32, and they did nothing with any of that. And according to Alexander Acosta, who is the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of Florida, he was told to back away from Epstein because Epstein was quote unquote intelligence. So, and to the kind of power that is required to get a U.S. attorney to stand down can be done by two people. It can be done by the attorney general. It can be done by the president. Damn. So that's how high the strings were pulled. Same with Franklin. The strings were pulled at the very apex of power.
Jesus, man. That's terrifying. That's fucking terrifying.
It doesn't speak well of our society.
Yeah, I want to see you on Good Morning America. I mean,
yeah. But it's, I don't know, isn't it just, they're just clearly intelligence? Like, there's no real debate here anymore, right?
Well, it's kind of interesting.
How else could this be done?
New York Magazine conscripted six quote unquote experts on Epstein. And I was one of them. And I cut my teeth with Epstein in 2012. And I acquired his black book in 2012. And I tried to sell an article about his black book. And nobody in the mainstream media wanted to touch it. Finally, Gawker was able to touch it, and then we put his black book up on the internet along with a bunch of his
with all the names and
what
stuff
was
in
yeah what was yeah. in the black book
The names of, I mean, the names went to Mount Olympus.
Yeah.
And the Black Book. He had like 22 contact numbers for Clinton and 17 contact numbers for.
Why would they keep a book? I don't understand why they would keep a record of that.
Probably so you don't get killed in prison.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
It's, people like that are very arrogant and they think that they can get away with
true,
everything.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they've had. Jeffrey Epstein had been trafficking children probably since 1995. And actually, the first time he was reported was 1996 to the FBI, and nothing happened. So he thought that he could do anything he wanted.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one thing that was interesting, the guy who got the Black Book, who took it out of there, who took it out of Epstein's possession, I think he got 18 months in jail. He got the same punishment as Epstein did
for moving the book,
except he had to go to a real prison, a federal prison.
Yeah, federal prison.
What?
It's the guy who stole the Black Book. Yeah, and I'll let him tell it.
Alfredo Rodriguez purloined it. He was Epstein's house manager and purloined the book. And it ultimately, and then he tried to sell it to a lawyer that was launching civil suits at Epstein because he was representing these underage victims. And it's pretty interesting. So Alfredo Rodriguez approached the lawyer. The lawyer went to the FBI. The FBI did a sting and got the Black Book. And then that's kind of how I got the Black Book. Can't really give out the source. But Alfredo Rodriguez circled the names of people that he felt were part of Epstein's network. And there's a lot of names that are circled. And it's kind of interesting. Virginia Giuffre, who was one of Epstein's victims, has named a number of the same people in her lawsuit documentation.
Who were some of those people? If you
she named Ahud Barak, Alan Dershowitz, and both of them are circled. Prince
Henry, right?
Prince Andrew. He's got multiple contacts, but I don't think his name was circled. Let me see. A couple of former mayor or governors of New Mexico, Bruce King and Bill Richardson, were circled. And the thing about Richardson, he was also Clinton's energy czar. So, and then a number of big time financiers were circled too. So it was like with the Franklin scandal, it was the cream of the crop of our society.
Jesus.
Unfortunately, the upper crust is a bunch of dough held together by crumbs. Yeah. Or a bunch of crumbs held together by dough. Yeah. I got that one.
So there's a link been, I guess so, the link's been made between the CIA or like, does anyone even know what they do besides like doing like sex traps? Like what else is, why are they doing that? I mean, obviously to like trap people up, but like.
Power.
Yeah.
It's all about power.
Yeah.
And the CIA started with a mandate when it was originally, when Harry Truman originally started the CIA. It was a precarious time. Joseph Stalin had the hydrogen bomb. Mm. And Joseph Stalin was someone who had zero appreciation of humanity. But what happened there was the CIA started its own funding mechanisms and then also the honey traps, because they felt it was too important, that fighting communism was too important to be left to politicians. So that's where this really dark part of the CIA comes in.
Yeah.
Is various types of schemes to make money and then also the honey traps.
Yeah, did you talk about William Colby at all?
In the Franklin scandal, I do talk about William Colby.
Yeah. Who's William Colby?
He was
director, I think.
He was the former director of the CIA. And actually, there was in the church hearing, there was a senator named Frank Church in 1977 who wanted to blow the lid open on a lot of the CIA's nefarious activities. And he did a lot. There were two, William Colby was called and Dick Helms was called, Richard Helms. Richard Helms was the then director of the CIA, and Colby had been the former director of the CIA. And Colby really showed people how nefarious the CIA was, some of the stuff that it was doing. But Helms kept his mouth shut. And what's interesting with Colby is he was actually conscripted. The Franklin Committee, what happened when Lawrence King was busted embezzling $40 million and wasn't charged with a single count of child abuse, there was a Franklin Committee that formed that was part of, it was the Nebraska Senate, it was a subcommittee of the Nebraska Senate. And they had a very good investigator. His name was Gary Caradore. And a lot of the evidence that I have comes from Gary Caradore, like the list of the 60 victims that I had, that came from Gary Caradore. The flight receipts that I got, that came from Gary Caradore. All this was put into a grand jury and sealed, but a lot of the, he was an amazing investigator. And his plane, what happened, he was, the FBI was hunting for him. I mean, here was the hunter became the prey, because he was finding victims and he was finding all kinds of stuff that was corroborating these kids. And these kids were coming forward and being videotaped. And if the dominoes had started to fall in Nebraska, they would have fallen all the way to Washington, D.C. So it had to be covered up at all costs. And Gary Caradore realized that the FBI was trying to put him away for scripting what these kids were saying. I mean, it was, none of the kids said that, but the FBI was, what the FBI did in Nebraska was very, very nefarious, threatening perpetrators, threatening victims. So what Caradore realized that he needed blackmail pictures, that was going to be absolute proof what was going on. And he got a hold of a blackmail photographer named Rusty Nelson. And they met in Chicago. And I've got five corroborations on this, that Rusty gave him pictures in Chicago. And Gary Caradore was flying back to Nebraska, and his plane blew up in midair. And then that was pretty much, and then the grand juries came out, shortly thereafter and said that there was no child abuse. And there's that Chinese proverb, kill one man, silence a thousand. Well, with this case, it was kill one man and his son and silence, 10,000, because nobody was willing to come forward after that, especially after the state and the feds had said that there was no child abuse. But the Franklin subcommittee hired William Colby to look into the death of Gary Caradore. And he didn't say that Gary Caradore had been assassinated publicly, but he did tell people that were affiliated with the committee that Gary Caradore had definitely been assassinated.
Damn.
So, and there were a lot of other suspicious deaths in the Franklin scandal. I mean, every chapter there's a strange death or two, pseudo suicides and things like that.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, man. That's nuts. And the Rusty guy, that's the guy you were driving with and got pulled over with?
Yes, I was. I myself was looking for blackmail pictures, and which I don't know if that was very prudent, but I was. And Rusty said that he had some. Now, Rusty is a guy that he takes blackmail pictures of adults and children engaged in
How do you get into that?
How do you get into it?
Water rises to its own level, I guess. I mean, I relationship would be too strong, but I forged kind of an alliance with Rusty because he was having a lot of problems with legal problems. And I said that I would help pay for his legal bills. All he had to do was provide me with blackmail pictures, which he said he had. So he took me on a wild goose chase to get blackmail pictures, and we didn't get any. And then I was driving him home on this desolate highway, and we got pulled over. And I started the Franklin scandal out with this. Is the cops, I show the cops my ID, and he doesn't even look at it. He says, get out of the car. Yeah. And then he deposits me in his car, and then... And then he runs me through and I'm clean, but then he runs Rusty Nelson through, and then there's a lot of numbers after him. Yeah. And I'm sure that they weren't nice numbers. So they take Rusty out and then they rip apart the car that I rented. And all they found was my ginseng root. So that was about it. But Rusty gave me a lot of insight. I would never use Rusty as a sole source, but Rusty gave me a lot of insight because one day I asked him, how does this work? And he said, it's like you're on a yacht and it's a beautiful day and you can have anything you want on this yacht. But if you decide to get off the yacht, the people on the yacht are going to make sure that you drown. So once you are compromised, there's zero motivation to come forward. Mm. And it's very interesting. I wrote about in Confessions of a DC Madam, I picked out some politicians who had been obviously compromised. One was Larry Craig, and Larry Craig was a very conservative representative and then senator. And he was in Washington, DC for 25 years. And he had the worst record of voting against gay rights, I believe, in the Senate, if not the worst, certainly up there. But he was getting gay escorts from Henry Vincent, who ran an escort service. Henry was the guy who I wrote the book with, Confessions of a DC Madam. So Craig was getting escorts from Henry, and then he was getting escorts from elsewhere because Kirby Dick's film Outrage talks about Craig getting escorts elsewhere. And then Craig was busted in an airport bathroom in Minneapolis trying to pick up a vice squad cop. So here's a U.S. senator. Damn. Here's a Damn. U.S. senator trying to pick up someone in a bathroom. I mean, a U.S. So how hard would it be to compromise that guy?
Yeah, true.
I mean, a kid doing an after school, project with a smartphone could compromise Larry Craig.
So wait, he was in an airport?
Easily.
He was in an airport.
His flight get delayed? He was like, you know what?
it's kind of interesting.
The old foot tap in the bathroom.
Yeah, it was the foot tap because I'm from Minneapolis, and I've been to that airport innumerable times, and I was going to the bathroom once in one of the stalls, and somebody next to me was slapping his foot on the ground, and I was thinking to myself, poor guy, he's got to have like a neurological disorder or something.
You wanted to play.
Yeah, he saw your shoes.
Now, an interesting guy is...
No, you're fair game. I would have been pissed.
And this is kind of interesting. Dennis Hastert had he was the Speaker of the House for 7 years, from, I believe, 1999 to 2006. And he was a strong-arm specialist. But he was a pedophile. He'd been molesting kids going back 4 years. And there was a whistleblower named Sybelle Edmonds who talked about Hastert, because the FBI knew about Hastert going to a house of ill repute while he was Speaker of the House in Chicago. So the FBI knew that Hastert was a pedophile, or chances are they knew that he was a pedophile. And for some inexplicable reason, they took him down. I don't know why the feds took him down and he had to do some time. The only thing that I can think of is he was getting too greedy and he was told to back off because he had a lobbying business that just exploded exponentially, especially with Turkey. So we don't really know the exact mechanisms of what he did to be taken down, but it was very strange, that whole thing. And then everything was sealed and there was gag orders. So I was really looking very hard into Hastert, but I just couldn't get any information at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the thing you're saying about the guys getting on to like the special crews. If you're like a rising star politically, you're probably feeling pretty good. You're like, I'm the man. I'm making money now. All this stuff. And then someone's like, hey, come hang with the big boys. But you smoke a joint with them. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
And like a girl comes out and like, yeah, by the way, she was 15.
Yeah, you get done. Fucked. They're like, yeah, she was 16.
Yeah. It's like, we own you now.
Damn.
Yeah, I mean, and it's that easy.
Yeah.
And when you think about like our politicians, they've got a potent psychological alchemy of power, lust, and arrogance. And nothing makes people stupid like arrogance and lust.
Yeah.
I mean, really smart people do unbelievably stupid things.
Why are you pointing to me?
Because of arrogance and lust.
Arrogance and lust.
Yeah, that's nuts. And if you don't play ball, they can probably just block you out altogether anyway. If you're like, that stuff's not for me, they're like, this guy's going to lose. Fuck him.
Yeah.
But I've been in this realm for 20 years now. Mm-hmm. And what Americans don't understand is that many of our politicians are compromised. Mm-hmm. And take Epstein, for an instance. With Epstein, he was blackmailing some of the most powerful men in the world. He had hidden cameras. When the Palm Beach Police Department searched his home in Palm Beach, they found hidden cameras. He had hidden cameras in his New York residence that Maria Farmer talked about, where multiple men were looking at the monitors. And his island was also wired for audiovisual blackmail. So he was blackmailing people. And what people don't understand is a guy like Jeffrey Epstein, a guy who he's from a blue collar family in Coney Island. He's a college dropout. A guy like that cannot blackmail some of the most powerful men in the world because they have access. A lot of them have access to thugs and organized crime. Like Les Wexner is heavily enmeshed in organized crime.
Who's that?
He was the billionaire. He owned Victoria's Secret. He was the billionaire that gave Jeffrey Epstein millions of dollars.
Oh, right, yeah.
And if Epstein was, in fact...
He owned Victoria's Secret and he still had to go to the pedophile parties? It's like, bro, you have it.
I mean, your store, just the mannequins alone, that's enough for me.
Yeah, let me in the mall at night.
Yeah, just the mannequins alone.
I mean, he's a old, frightening, scary-looking dude.
What?
I mean, if I was a young woman and he showed up, I mean, I'd split. But anyway, so there's no way that Epstein could have been blackmailing these people by himself.
Right.
There was obviously a large organization behind him that said to these people that were blackmailed, and Spence had the same thing with the Franklin scandal. If you come after this guy, there's going to be huge retribution. And that's what kept, I believe, Jeffrey Epstein alive.
How many types of those organizations do you think are running? Because, I mean, they caught Epstein.
Yeah.
But how many of those do you think, like, I mean, that has to be a pretty consistent.
Yes. I think that networks like that are ubiquitous in the United States of America. Because of the writing that I've done the last 20 years, a lot of people have talked to me about these networks and they want me to investigate them. And I'm only one guy.
Yeah.
So, I tell them, I don't know if I can really help, because you can tell when you see major judicial malfeasance, that can be an indication that there's a network there.
Oh, yeah. What I was talking earlier, like in central Pennsylvania, there was the Penn State, Jerry Sandusky thing. There was, I think, a district attorney that was looking into the case years before, and he vanished.
Yes,
He
was found, he vanished. His car was found by, I think, a lake.
The river. I think the river. Susquehanna River.
And I did talk to a prosecutor under him, and she believed that Jerry Sandusky was part of a pedophile network. She really believed that. And she believed that prosecutor had also been murdered,
too. It sounded like, Jesus. Yeah, I mean, it sounded like it, because it was from the Second Mile Foundation, which was a lot like Boys Town.
Yes.
It was for troubled kids.
Yeah.
Jerry Sandusky was doing this, but then, it is a weird story. I was at the day, the first game Joe Paterno didn't coach. Mm-hmm. So it was the week after that story broke.
You went to that game?
I went to that game. I was pretty excited about it, but we were supposed to go. I went to a Second Mile dinner.
What?
A dude that was high up at Merrill Lynch, I think.
Uh-huh.
Or one of those, Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
We went to his house. He was a Penn State alumni. I don't want to besmirch him because he might not have been a pedophile.
Oh, yeah.
But it was supposed to be a Second Mile dinner with like Joe Paterno, Sandusky, like all these guys.
What?
And then I was walking around his giant mansion. It's just a picture of him with every single president, all these things.
Really?
I don't know. It's just like you can see the political power these dudes have.
Yeah.
They have that power. And then the one guy who's friends with all them is doing exactly what they were doing in the Franklin scandal, which is getting kids out of a orphanage type situation and banging them. He was
lower socioeconomic. Like,
give them the work.
Yeah. predators know how to prey.
And then a district attorney just vanished. Was it a district attorney? Who
vanished? I can't think of his name, but yes.
They found his laptop and the hard drive was taken out of it.
I mean, dude.
Like, it was like, yeah.
That was, there's indications that that was a network. But I pursued that for quite some time, I got pretty close to somebody who could help corroborate it, but I couldn't nail it. So, and that's the thing, investigations like this, like the Franklin scandal, it took 7 years to investigate that. And I've been investigating Epstein since 2012. I'm ready to write a really good book on Epstein. I'm finishing up one book and I'd like to write, because so many of
keep that quiet till it's out.
So many of the books on Epstein have been, Epstein light, like Filthy Rich on Netflix.
Yeah. That Netflix show was terrible. I turned it off.
Was it really? I didn't even watch
it. They don't even come close.
Really?
They do the same thing with Sandusky where they're like, yeah, it was just one guy. We got him. It's like, no.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, I never thought about the grand jury thing before. That is kind of an indicator. Be like, well, let's do like a special trial for this guy. It's like,
yeah.
I didn't even know what those things were, to be honest. I thought that was like, ooh, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Americans have no idea about grand juries and how easy they are to corrupt. So it's unfortunate that so many Americans are unaware of so many things about their judiciary.
It's like the same reason people weren't taking your articles. It's like people don't want to, like they don't want to know. Yeah. Like if I told this to my dad, he'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Shut up. Like he'd be like, I don't want to even think about this.
Yeah. Or like there's creeps out there.
Yeah.
But
there's only one member of my family that reads anything I write. But if you want to be an ostrich and stick your head in the sand, I mean, the evil is only going to get larger and larger and larger. I mean, and that's the problem. As I said earlier, a huge problem has been the media. The media was into digging up salacious dirt, and that was it. No one called for any kind of justice. The New York Times did an article that named six procurers, aka pimps, and the only one that's been indicted is Maxwell.
Yeah.
So if Epstein was an actual trial, if there was jurisprudence that wasn't corrupted, those procurers, and we know more than six, but you could start with those six procurers would be indicted on multiple counts of child trafficking. A count of child trafficking is anywhere from 15 years to life. So you could rack up, they could all be looking at 1,000 years or whatever, and then you'd get them to flip on the perps. I mean, that's how the mafia was taken down.
Yeah.
You'd get the lower people on the lower echelon to flip on the higher echelon and reduce their sentences. But there's been none of that. Ghislaine Maxwell is, and the Ghislaine Maxwell trial was such a travesty of justice. The girls or women now who really knew a lot about the network and who were molested by some very powerful people, none of them were called. It was just the only victims that were called, and I think it was only four, were molested by just Epstein and Maxwell.
Has Maxwell been sentenced to anything yet?
No, she has not been sentenced, and there's that judicial problem of one of the jurors saying that he'd been molested, and Maxwell, I don't know how that's winding right now, but the whole thing, everything about Epstein, there's nothing rational about it. Nothing makes sense. Laws of the land have just been thrown in the toilet.
How did you feel when he committed suicide, allegedly? Did you know that was coming? Because I think it seemed like everyone was like, they're going to kill him. And then one day the cameras didn't work and the guards took a break.
Well, the guards took a break. The cameras didn't work. It's
probably when you fix the cameras.
True.
Damn, the cameras broke. Oh, damn it.
It's certainly very suspicious.
I don't think there's ever been more of a clear somebody killed him case.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a guy in prison that the whole world was saying they're going to kill him. Oh, and then one day, I mean, they knew, the guards knew, this guy's a risk. And then one day, again, the cameras didn't work and the guards were taking a walk.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of anomalies. The his cellmate was taken out of the cell.
I didn't even know he had a cellmate.
Yeah, he had a cellmate.
What?
And the guy got taken out of the cell and then he...
Yeah.
It's so, crazy.
That must have been crazy. Like, what are you in here for? Like,
yeah. Well, if you watch and actually, right, his Bill cellmate had been
a 14-year-old.
His cellmate had been a multiple murderer at one point.
What?
A former police officer. And they took him out. And what's kind of interesting, William Barr, our illustrious attorney general, who helped. Now, this is kind of interesting. And this is where Franklin and Epstein connect. William Barr was Bush 1's attorney general after Richard Thornburgh ran for the Senate. Barr helped cover up the Franklin scandal. And then Barr played an integral role in covering up the Epstein scandal.
Damn.
And Barr said when Epstein killed himself, heads are going to roll, and no heads rolled. And actually, the warden of that particular Metropolitan Correctional Facility in New York, she was given a cushy job in New Jersey that, you know, she wasn't.
What?
Yeah, I mean, so.
Thornburgh, by the way, wasn't he Harrisburg's governor?
Thornburgh was Pennsylvania.
Hey, that links second mile.
Yeah.
Really? What about Ed Rendell? What about Ed Rendell?
He hasn't come up, but Thornburgh definitely helped cover up the Franklin scandal.
Thornburgh helped that? Yeah, see?
And then Barr.
What?
And then Barr, yeah.
Oh, God.
Thornburgh is, I believe that Thornburgh is a pretty dirty politician.
Yeah. Oh, no.
What is
the guy whose house I was at? I was.
Oh, is that what?
Nothing. This is getting too close. Now I'm part of the. I know. I'm part of the thing now.
Damn. Yeah,
the guy I was. The reason I was there was the guy I was with was he worked with Thornburgh.
What?
And we were at a second mile.
Dude.
See, this is what happens when I read when I listen to this.
You start.
I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, you get it's unsettling. It is weird though, because when you do boil it down to like, you know, think about it, like little kids, it's just heartbreaking. But it's been politicized. The issue of sex trafficking, I would say, is kind of pursued more by people who lean to the right politically for some reason.
Well, actually, there's the feminist left and the religious right are equally against sex trafficking.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They're strange, for lack of a better word, bedfellows. Mm-hmm. But I've been very disappointed by the anti-trafficking community because they have not been vociferous at all about what's happened with Epstein. We know who a lot of the perps are. We know who a lot of the procurers are. There should be a lot of people in prison right now.
Yeah.
But, and it's really heartbreaking for me. The National Center on Sexual Exploitation has like an anti-trafficking summit. And I've spoken there at the last couple of years. And I've seen them do very little to get this issue out. Most of the anti-trafficking organizations, unfortunately, have not been vociferous about this issue at all.
Yeah, so
and it's heartbreaking to me because when the government doesn't work and when the media doesn't work, you've got a lot of anti-trafficking organizations. Mm-hmm. They should band together. I mean, either if you're against child trafficking, you're categorically against child trafficking.
Yeah.
And here is an obvious case of child trafficking being covered up. And none of these organizations are getting, making any noise about it, which is very difficult for me because I know some of the people involved in these organizations and I just expected more from them. It was troubling.
Yeah. What is so with the media in general? How do you think? Like, how much of this stuff do you think they know and cover up, or how much does this stuff just not come across their like desk, or like have they had any like specific roles in like kind of?
It's hard to say. I will say this, that I do believe that a lot of people in the media are compromised.
Yeah.
And I think people very high in the media, and I don't know if this is true anymore, but it would be close. Six corporations own 90% of the media that's imbibed by Americans. And I got to hand it to the CIA or intelligence or whatever you want to call it. I mean, they don't compromise people at the, I mean, they go right up to the top when they compromise somebody. So I don't know exactly, I've got some suspicions about who's compromised and who's not. But I don't know exactly, but I will say this, that the way that the media reacted to this with just, you know, as I said earlier, just kicking out salacious dirt, it just was, you know, it was an embarrassment for me as a journalist to see them the way that the media handled this.
See, yeah, it seems like all they ever do is post a picture of Trump with Maxwell or something. They never look into anybody who's guilty of, or not guilty, but who's been named. By
Virginia Giuffre named a bunch of them, and her in a deposition, and her deposition was unsealed, and a number of the people that she named were circled by Alfredo Rodriguez in the Black Book. So there you've got double corroboration, and but none of them have been arrested. I don't even know if any of them have been questioned. I mean, it's
Prince Andrew got hit. He got like, but it's weird. It's like, it seemed like he settled with people, didn't he? Didn't he settle out of court?
Yeah, I think it. I mean, I've heard $12 million, but I'm not exactly sure.
So, but he, you know, that's kind
I
of.
I think his mommy came in.
His mommy came in.
Came in.
Yeah. Oh my god, man.
Yeah. That's embarrassing.
God,
you gotta wake your mom up in the middle of the night and be like, come on. You gotta stand in the doorway and go, Mom, can I lay with you for a little?
Mother,
I'm in trouble. Oh, what did you do, Andrew?
Remember that cool island I was going to?
Remember I kept going to the cool parties with the other 12-year-olds?